Welcome to Infinite Returns, Commercial Real Estate Investing, brought to you by Infinity Commercial Capital. We help people find money. We are investors, lenders, and financing advisors. And this podcast is about real estate investing and helping you. Whether it's investing in residential rental properties or commercial properties, we talk about lending and all things real estate. From newbie to experienced, from funding to the strategy it takes to find success. Welcome your host, Carl Baker.
Well, welcome to our show, Infinite Returns, a show about commercial real estate investing. We talk about all things real estate in this show. I'm your host, Carl Baker, a real estate investor, a licensed CPA for over 30 years, and the CEO of Infinity Commercial Capital, our show sponsor. At Infinity Commercial Capital, we help people find money. More about that in a few minutes at the end of the show. Before we get started with the show, I just want to remind our listeners, if you're watching by video, make sure you follow the show, subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're listening in an audio platform, follow the show to get our remaining content and previous shows, etc. Thank you very much for that. That helps. Today, I'm excited to introduce Bill Aubin with Optiv Commercial Capital in Conifer, Colorado. He and I have actually known each other for several years, and you'll hear how in a minute here. He is a friend of mine, and we are friends of the firm professionally, personally. We're going to talk, as a little preface, we're going to talk about equity fundraising in the world of commercial real estate. But this is, I'm going to read some of his bio and talk about what I know about him, and then I'll introduce him. Bill Aubin, commercial finance advisor with Optiv Commercial Capital based in Conifer, Colorado. Optiv, if you're wondering where that comes from, Optiv means chosen for trust, and that's a great thing. And that is something that he is very proud of. You may not like or agree with everything he says, and that's actually a part of commercial financing, but it's important that you trust me and my intentions. Prior to helping clients in the financial services needs, he was a commercial and industrial service. He was in the commercial and industrial service industry. He worked with a team that helped companies with safety and image. He learned a lot about what's important to business owners and to connect and relate to different personalities. I can personally attest he's very personable, honorable, and he knows how to connect with his clients and borrowers very well. I've seen that very, very much. He started Optiv Commercial Capital 4 years ago, which is when Infinity Commercial Capital started. We went through some training and some classes together. That's how we know each other. And we have stayed in touch for over 4 years now and have enjoyed that professional and personal relationship. He's personally experienced how difficult it is to secure funding to start or buy a business. And he's helped many businesses receive loans to help their businesses grow, which is what we are in this business to do. He has done everything from SBA funding to commercial real estate. They're in your bio here. I'm going to stop at this point and just let Bill say hello. You did talk about in your bio a $6 million deal. If you want to say hello and talk about that a little bit, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks hello, so much, Bill. Carl. Great to be here. I really appreciate the invitation just to talk about what we do and just share that. It's such a great thing. So, I've done various type deals. I think the smallest one I did was a $7,500 loan. And then that $6 million one, that was a total project cost. It was $8 million, turned into a $6.3 million loan. And that was a great one. It was referred to me by a commercial realtor that I know, and it wasn't even their deal. Another commercial realtor contacted him because the borrowers were struggling. And if anyone's familiar with Denver, it's the actual old Stapleton Airport before we had Denver International. And this client was a brewery, and their whole motif, their theme is they're called Flight, F-L-Y-T-E. And their whole theme is all about aeronautics and air travel, things like that. So it was a perfect building. It was the actual, I think it's 11 floor control tower, like you'd see for an airport. And that's part of their place. And it's a big social eating, drinking, brewery, things like that. But it was pretty exciting to go to basically a landmark in this area, be able to climb the tower and meet all the people. Challenges they had, they were trying to close quickly. The first two lenders they had both agreed to it and both backed out. So now they were into a time crunch. They went from 90 day to 60 day to 30 day. If they could close in 30 days, which we were able to do, they were able to save $100,000 off the asking price. They had negotiated that. And it was just a matter of really finding out exactly what their strengths were. Like everything we do, find the strengths, find the challenges, find the lender that absolutely loved it. Great lender. They got into a great bridge loan while they were waiting to sell another piece of property that was for sale. And it went through and everybody was happy. And it was just that was kind of the catalyst for me to move more from the SBA to the real estate world. Just because it was such a great experience working with all those people. So,
yeah, cool. So I thank you for that. And I hope our audience has a good sense for who's speaking here. Tell us what your favorite cause is. We believe in giving back in our respective communities. And whether that's just because we're good humans or because of our faith, we just want to highlight causes. So, Bill, tell me, what's your favorite cause?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And we have two. I'm going to speak on my wife's behalf as well. I know you asked me, but I speak on her behalf as well.
Sure.
For myself personally, I'm a big fan of hospice. I've been, they've done some great things for my family. Ironically, they did some great things for my grandparents, both of my dad's parents. So my dad started a fishing tournament every year in Florida, and all the proceeds and past expenses went to that hospice. Ironically, 7 years after he started that and was donating, he became a beneficiary of their services. And it was kind of interesting to see his name on the wall, and they got to help him too. So I think hospice is a great organization. My wife is a teacher, and they do a program through her school every year. Her cause is funding for water in Africa, helping with wells and helping them do the things and learning what the children and the people do there, how hard of a struggle it is. So she does a great thing with her classroom every year, and they've raised quite a bit of money for that. So those are our two things as a family that we try to support and do what we can for. So.
Well, that's awesome. I didn't know what you were going to say. My family
sure,
has
recently.
Well, the reason, no, well, the, what I mean by that is the reason that's important is my family has just utilized the services of a hospice and saw the value of that as well. So can attest to the hospice industry and the services that group provides. So fantastic. So let's begin talking about commercial real estate investing. And just to sort of tee it up to really understand why and when a person who is a real estate investor, whether they're purchasing a turnkey property or whether they're developing something, it costs money. And first of all, talking about the actual sponsor, when you're an investor, you're either a sole proprietor or you're a partnership, and not to mention a whole different subject, which might be an investment syndication with limited partnerships, et cetera. But all of those are the beginning of a structure that needs to pool money, find deals, and then use that money. So what are some of the advantages of just being a sole proprietor that is investing in funding, investing in real estate?
Sure. Now, as a sole proprietor, you're self-accountable. It's only yourself. Decisions, no dilution. It is 100% ownership.
Right.
A lot of times, I think, some of the struggles to that, as you know, of any business owner, any entrepreneur, any investor, there's things that go with that. There's strengths and weaknesses. And I think the biggest thing to really put out there is if you're capable to achieve all the funding and to know, that's a good question. And unfortunately, I think sometimes before I speak and I'm going through all that there is. But I think really part of that, though, Carl, is what I find is knowing what's their direction. What are you trying to accomplish? What's the answer? How are you going to best get there? And everybody's at a different place in that process. So that's the key, I think.
Yeah, I think where I was going with that, if you're a sole proprietor, you have 100% ownership and it's all up to you. You get all the benefits to it, but you also might be limited in your ability to fund said deals, the deals that you're looking at. So you might then segue into a partnership where you have the experience, somebody else has the funding. Then you start to think about how are we going to fund the deals? Because as you're investing, you're looking at deals, then you are looking to understand how to fund those deals. And many people, you could buy a piece of property and just pay cash for it. If you do that, you're going to need a higher return, because if you think about cash on cash return, if you put all of your money into it and own it without any debt, then you need a higher return for all of that money. So people usually finance real estate through some sort of a debt in order to get a higher return on the money that you're putting into it. And you're getting the benefits of 100% ownership, but you're using other people's money. So I'm segueing into equity, but talking about it in terms of other people's money first, and whether that is in the form of debt or whether it's in the form of equity, you're really minimizing the amount you're trying to, as an investor, you're trying to minimize the amount of funds that you're putting into it so that you get a higher return on those dollars and you're just getting more done. And there's lots of other reasons as well. So if that doesn't work, if you are not able to, or if you're not able to use your own cash, we would actually say it's probably not wise to pay cash for all those reasons I've just talked about. Or if you aren't able to qualify for a debt instrument, let's talk about that. Why might a investor not qualify for a debt instrument and keep the 100% ownership? And what are some of the reasons why you may not qualify for debt?
Absolutely. No, great question as well. And a lot of the challenge is, of course, it depends a little bit on the entity. You know, what is the investment structure? Is it a business? Is it a rental? Is it a owner-occupy? All the various things, looking mm-hmm. at it from an investor mm-hmm. standpoint. But are you a startup? Let's get a little more back. Primary things that a lender looks at to qualify a deal are going to apply to the equity component versus debt. Cash flow, collateral, credit, capacity, character, you know, the things that we typically use to qualify. Mm-hmm. And I know you have a broad audience, everything from lenders to borrowers to people that are exploring. But those are the main qualifiers. So you're going to have those, of course. A lot of people are not going to qualify. Maybe they're, depending on what their current income level is, credit, things they've done in the past, all those things that may make them a good candidate for a debt loan could also disqualify them. So that's why they're going to look at other options. Then you get into the equity component, and that's very diverse. You venture capitalists, investors, crowdfunding, IPO, initial public offering. There's a lot of other ways to do that. And I think sometimes people don't even realize equity can be, you know, your friends, your family, every other portion of a loan. If it's not debt, it has to be equity or some hybrid combination of the two. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad borrower. It doesn't mean it's a bad deal or opportunity. Sometimes there's just something that makes it not viable for a lender to put money into.
Yeah, I was thinking, and we could just sort of start to segue into some of the deals that either you've worked on individually or that we've worked on or I've worked on or that we've worked on collectively, because we have worked on some together. In those cases, you mentioned the qualifiers, the C's, collateral, cash flow, credit, and what I call capacity. That capacity of borrower might include experience, it might include liquidity, and generally, let's just talk in terms of a development, for example. If you're borrowing or planning to develop a property that involves construction, so it's a higher risk venture, lenders I would say most people, if you're not paying cash, most people would advise if you can get debt and maintain more ownership, that's the better way to do it. Because you're maintaining control, you're maintaining ownership, you will be the beneficiary of the rewards at the end. So if you can get debt as opposed to equity financing, which is what I call the most expensive form of financing, you should do it that way. But maybe you don't have all of the things that will get you to qualify for it. Things that I'm thinking of, maybe a person has low amount of liquidity. Maybe they have they have a great deal, but they don't have the experience to get that project over the goal line. So talk about that in context of what you've seen.
No, that's absolutely right. And another thing I was thinking of too, sometimes it's the down payment injection, or it's the earnest money, mm-hmm. or the maybe they need plans drawn. You know, there's so many things along the way, and a current deal that we're working on right now, they've been seeking funding for over 2 years. Of course, it's not that they're stagnant, but still, it's been on the table for a little while. As this is moving along, they're putting more and more and more money into this project. There's zoning, there's planning, there's architecture, there's marketing, there's everything that goes along. Well, that's cash drain because they're still pre-revenue. You're not making any money on this property yet. So they might have, and in this certain case right now, they've got over $2 million of their personal money, this group of five people that are funding it. So they put a lot of money into this, and they might only be short $100,000. Whatever that case is, they need that money to get to the next step. And it's not that they've done anything wrong, but you can't move the ball forward, so to speak, until you get something else. So that's just a perfect example where people can come back and say, oh my gosh, you're trying to borrow $20 million and you don't even have $100,000. Well, I do, but it's all tied up in this project. I'm just not liquid for $100,000 today. I'm just throwing arbitrary numbers out there. You mentioned absolutely, it's some point. Yes, it can be the most expensive. One of the downsides, there's no necessary timeline where a debt loan, you pay it off, you've paid it off, it's done, you don't owe anymore. Equity, you've given away that percentage. If you have a buyout structure, it may have an end date. Maybe not. Maybe it's in a perpetuity till the end of time. But like we always say, what's the cost of getting the money versus the cost of not getting the money? Maybe someone does not mind giving. I had someone in my office this morning talking about buying out partner buyout and going through all the ramifications, which is like, it doesn't matter what the cost of the money is because I have to get this done. And I don't mean crazy, it doesn't matter, but relatively speaking, it was worth it for her to get the loan to do what she needs to do. And that's, again, that's back to my opening statement. Start from the answer. What are you trying to accomplish? If the cost of this had given up X amount of your company, then, maybe it is important to you. Maybe that is what you have to do. This is kind of an aside, but for people that aren't familiar with this, I did this in a speech. I was talking to a local high school DECA class, and I was talking to our Conifer Chamber, and both of them, I used kind of a similar thing. I discussed the Shark Tank scenario of the TV show, and that's a real, kind of elementary overview. But for someone that hasn't watched it, just watch it. And I can tell you real quick, here's what happens and here's what's going to happen. But it gives you an idea. Right. They pre-qualify a deal quicker than anybody I've ever seen. They got a sticky pad and they ask the same questions. Know your deal, know what you're willing to offer. Know that you might have to give a little bit more, but it might be worth it. And it's all based on the valuation of the return or the valuation of the company currently and the valuation of the company moving forward. That will tell you pretty much any question you would need to ask. I mean, granted, again, it's a very elementary view, but for anybody that doesn't understand an equity deal, just watch the show one time. You'll get an idea of what's involved and the pain.
Absolutely. One of the things that you said was that somebody had been all kinds of comments there and all fantastic what you just talked about, Bill. But you mentioned that a deal your client has been working for a couple years. That highlights the fact that real estate can be hard and difficult, and it really takes stick-to-itiveness to get through. These things, I don't know what the size of that deal is, but presuming it's more than $500,000, a million, it's probably big.
real quick, I'll throw it in because it is relevant. When they first came to me, they were looking for $18 million just to refi the land. The total project cost by the time all is said and done is $400 million. It's an extreme okay. vertical. Yeah. There's an awful lot to it. We're doing step by step because yeah. it's, you know, this step to this step to this step. Now it's right at about 17.5, 17.6. And I did, and as an aside, I got them approved for $38 million a year and a half ago. They didn't like the fees. They didn't like the terms. It was not worth it for them. So here we are. But just to put it into context a little bit for you. So.
Again, lots there. So big, a good sized project. It takes a while. It takes stick-to-itiveness. Typically, you're financing and raising capital in phases. If you can, you can't get to the end if you can't take your first step. And so, so typically, those kinds of deals are funded in phases. It's too complicated to try to understand how do we put a $400 million package together? How do we do that from start? No, let's break it down to phases, to steps. What do we need right now? We need to buy the land. We need to own the land. We need to pay off, a bridge lender that originally financed the land. We need to fund permits. We need to pay for architectural drawings. Just break the project down and put it into phases. And eventually, the project will gain momentum and will continue on. So a lot there in what you talked about. And the other thing that you mentioned is, it sounds like a couple of years ago, you secured for them some debt financing. It didn't make sense to them. Notice how people, they came back because they have that stick-to-itiveness. They understand ultimately what their funding path is going to look like. And they will eventually come around. And if they're committed to the deal, they understand where they fit in the funding path. That's how I articulate that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I can't reemphasize it enough. It's how they package it. And it's the phases that you talked about. Ironically, once they get to this point right now of this deal, and it's kind of an awful lot of parts to it. It's a 177 acre, the total project. Of that part, they're subdividing it and they're selling some of the other parcels to it. They had to have secure funding put in place before the city would allow them to sell some of the other parcels because they had to have it zoned, plat number, lot number, you know, everything that's involved in that process as well, Carl. So it was almost like, yeah, it can be self-funding, but they've got to get to that point. Much like you said, it's just get to the next phase, get to the next step. Well, they're making $6 million on one parcel, they're selling $4 million on another. Well, that's almost this entire loan they're trying to take out right now. But you can't sell something that's not for sale yet, and it can't be for sale till you have the funding. And it's just this step-by-step-by-step process. And, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum. There's deal fatigue. Everyone gets tired of a deal. And here we are 2 years later. Now we finally got it on the right path to get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about deal structure. And by no means do I want us to get too specific about any one deal, you get into proprietary information. That's obviously not our goal. But just talk about what does essentially they're getting into in your experience. They're going to get into a partnership of some sort. Talk about the process by which that is evaluated and what sort of equity ownership have you seen or deal structure have you seen in your experience?
Absolutely. Great question again. And a lot of it goes to much how you and I, other people in the industry, how we qualify a loan. Very, very similar type thing. You know, what is the likelihood this is going to work? What is the competition? What is the experience of the borrower? You know, is it they've done X for all this time and now they're trying to jump ship and do something completely different? Or do they have a fairly strong experience, you know, in background in development, things like that. So you're going to qualify mm-hmm. the borrowers to some extent, the deal. You're going to look at all those things first. Once you get to, and that's just me. That's before I even get to a lender. I have to be comfortable. I can't sell something I haven't bought. If I can buy right. into it and say, well, would I invest money into this? Or, you know, would I invest Carl's money into this? But, you know, once you get to that point and you're comfortable with it, then, okay, now I got to find the lender that likes these type things. And then you're going to present to them from a very high level. This is the deal. This is where it's located. This is what their ask is. Of course, they can be a little bit flexible, hopefully. And you're going to expect the lender to come back with what their terms are. And there's going to be, sometimes you got to look at, well, for instance, I have one that's very creative, knowing that it's pre-revenue. Well, they can't pay closing costs. They can't start making payments every 30 days. They don't have any money yet. They've got to get X far along in the process until they're going to start making money. So you've got to take that into account. And your lenders have to know this up front. And then they're going to set what their parameters are. They're going to come and say, okay, Bill or Carl, we like this about the deal. We need to know a little bit more. And again, that's the experience. Everything that I've already done, they're going to want to know what's important to them. What's the experience level? What's the likelihood of success? What are you asking for? And then they're going to come back with their number. And it could be they want 10%, 20%, 30%. It's going to be based on the appraisal. Of course, the stronger the appraisal, you know, if they're only trying to borrow 20 to 30% of what the cost is versus 50, 60, 70%, that's going to all affect the sliding scale of what they're going to ask for. Much like anyone else, your down payment goes up with the risk. Your rates go up with the risk. So I've seen somewhere they're like, we're going to loan X amount. We want 30%, or we're going to take 100% until the final payoff. And there's all these different variables in the middle.
Yeah.
So I have yet to have a take it or leave it on any part, you know, by a borrower, by a lender, because you're usually opening much back to my Shark Tank. you know, you're opening the floor for negotiation. Yeah. Here's what I'd like. Here's what I want. When most people come to us, they're, I don't want to say desperate, but they're not 100% A paper going to go to the local bank and they're going to get 3.5% and no fees and it's going to be a great deal. There's a reason. It's either it's construction, it's land, it's rural, it's cannabis, gas station, car wash, underground storage tanks, challenged borrower with
investor experience. Yeah.
Everything. Yes, sir. Yes, exactly. So there's a reason. Conversely, our lenders get that too. They're going to know there's going to be a little hair on this. It's going to be a challenge. There's going to be some things we're going to have to overcome. What can we give up? And maybe they'll give it up on the deposit, you know, the initial down payment that they're going to require. Maybe they'll back it into the rates on the other side. Maybe they'll back it into, I've had one. This is an interesting one that I haven't seen very much, but I like the way they did it. Very straightforward 12-month bridge loan, decent rates, relatively. Fees are very good. They're working with the borrower on that to try to make it as accommodating as possible. But they have a great structure where they have the option. It's not a guaranteed equity thing. If they like the deal and if they like how it goes through at the end of 12 months when the loan is getting paid off, they have the option to get equity. They have first right of refusal. So they can take it. If they don't choose to proceed with their equity ownership, there is a fee, but that's a great thing for them. So they're kind of waiving their regular fees, so to speak, and then they're tacking it on the end, knowing that they have the absolute first right to take advantage of it if they want. So they're kind of benefiting the borrower to some extent there. Yes, it's expensive at the end, but maybe we're hoping they're going to take the equity. And here's another unmentioned as of yet. The interesting thing, that lender is going above and beyond, and they've already reached out to some other people in their group, their network per se, to people that might be interested in taking on the vertical, the build of the townhomes, apartments, all the other things, because that helps them gain credibility with them. It makes me more of a resource to go back to my borrower. And it again allows them the action, if they secure that funding or have somebody interested, that makes them much more likely to want to take on that equity component. So again, that's an awful lot of things you didn't even ask for, but those are all kind of hidden or value adds, I think, that this lender is able to do for us. So.
Well, I think that also highlights the importance of relationship building. And we talk about that in commercial real estate, and sometimes it's something possible to get done. And it really highlights to me the importance of relationship building, because they're going to help you get the deal done. And they talk about that in Shark Tank all the time. One of the values that these people that are coming in and bringing their company into Shark Tank is to provide, help them provide the capital, but also provide, establish a relationship with somebody that is a better expert than they are, yeah, and can help them advance their cause. I personally don't watch Shark Tank a whole lot because it's too much like work for me. It's fascinating, but it's, you know, it's work. You're sitting there. I find myself sitting there starting to calculate the numbers and vet what I think the deal is going to look like and all that stuff. But it's fun. And it absolutely is a great lesson. If you're wanting to understand how equity deals are done, you can get it done in those half hour shows. What are some of the, we'll start to wrap up here pretty quickly, but what are some of the cons? And to you and me, they may be obvious, but what are some of the downsides that a investor, if they're talking to capital providers that might offer an ownership stake, what are some of the downsides?
I'm sorry, for the investor or
for the borrower.
Yeah, for the borrower. Okay, it can be more expensive, not always, but as a rule of thumb, yes, in the actual cost of the money, it can also be more expensive. And you're giving up a portion of your company. You know,
that's really important
to have a good relationship or you're going to struggle. Much like the client that was in this morning, she's trying to buy out her partner because they're not seeing the same for the direction of the company. Well, if you want it to go one place, I want it to go the other, but yet you're an equity investor in this company, that's important. You're sharing the profits, you're sharing some of the control. Dilution, I think that is such a great word. I just can't think of a better word to explain it. You're diluting your ownership of the company.
Absolutely.
As well as your shares, as well as your profits. I mean, you can look at, you know, crowdfunding, you can look at angels, you can look at VCs, you know, all the different ways that friends, family, you name it. There's a lot of different ways that you can give up equity ownership. And again, back to Shark Tank, I think hopefully you're getting the benefit. You're getting a, you know, symbiotic relationship with someone that's going to move the company forward and do more for you that you can't do on your own. But there's a price to that. Absolutely. That's absolutely a con. But you have to, again, weigh it. If the alternative is not being able to do it, not being able to move forward, well, then maybe it does make sense.
Yeah, I think generally people get into a deal with other partners, whether they are limited partners or general partners. They do it because of the synergies. You can get more done together, but it also complicates things because you do lose control of the advancing of the project. Whether you lose control of the ownership, you lose control of certain decision making, and certainly you can also mitigate that and manage that through the deal, whether it's through preferred offerings or common offerings, limited partnerships, general partnerships. You can manage all of that. You can put in some sort of a waterfall equity structure to manage that. One last thing as I segue into that and just thinking about that, how does a person, let's say a sponsor sought that capital because all things being equal, they wanted to be 100% owner and get this done. They sought the capital because of one of the things that you said earlier, which is it's not going to get done otherwise. So you seek out the partnership for the capital, maybe for the experience. Now you're into it and you have these partners and they've taken an ownership. How does a buyer, sponsor, get out of a deal like that? How do they did it to get the capital. Now they are down the road. They feel like they can manage the project themselves and they want to, see an exit. How are those deals structured? And we'll end with that comment.
Absolutely. Great question. And you asked a question I'm completely not prepared for, so I'm going to think as I'm speaking.
Oh, boy, sorry.
But yeah, speaking as – but no, that is a great question, and it hasn't really – I just haven't had a ton of experience with it because that has not come up. Typically, again, we kind of had that discussion this morning, but really what that's going to look like usually is, of course, there's going to have to first be an agreement because said seller, said partner – may or may not want to give up that. Or they might even come to you and say, hey, Carl, I can use that capital somewhere else. I'd like to offer you, you know, the chance to buy back our equity stake, our position. So that would very much be a good opportunity for your traditional debt loan at that point. You've got established numbers, you've been in business, you've got revenue, you've done the things that you want to do. Now you're just trying to buy out your employee, your partner buyout. So that would be primarily the way it would go. And then there's various ways you can do that along the way. You could do some different type things. You mentioned waterfall. I'm going to give you more of the profits till we get to that exit strategy, or I'm sorry, till we get to that exit. I'm going to seek out a debt loan. I'm going to bring up something else. But again, the absolute key to that is to having that discussion, to having that agreement. Sometimes you know, when you go into the deal, you might want to have that. You might want to discuss that from the very beginning. Hey, once we're 3 years into this, 2 years, yeah, 1 year, 10, I want to have the option. Or what's that going to look like? But know that when you're getting your paperwork drawn up, when do you want to have that open for consideration? Because what do you do when the seller doesn't want to sell?
Yeah, I think I think you alluded to it and didn't even know it, but you have a valuation. And ultimately, there is some sort of an exit by the partners if everybody is amenable to it. And at the beginning, the project was worth X. And at some place down the road, we're really talking in this example about a development. So let's say the development has progressed where there is a functioning property now, whether it's a phased component and the rest of it isn't being done, but let's just say 100% of it is done. The value of that property is more, presumably, than it was at the beginning. And so a very simple equity exit would be to revalue. If a person owns 30%, revalue the 30%, revalue the property and pay out a 30% valuation based on that. That's one possibility. But if you have planned for and negotiated that exit strategy at the beginning, I think you could put in other types of structures where there is a declining ownership until they get a predetermined return on their money. Put in X amount. We want a 4x return, whatever. Mm-hmm. At that point, we can draw up the ownership structure until they get that, and then have a predetermined exit contractually based on that return. There are other ways, limited partnerships with non-voting rights and et cetera. So just wanted to touch on that a little bit. And you had talked about it already with the appraisals. That was a hint there. All right. Well, great. Any final comments from you, Bill? We're going to talk about the overarching case study, but our overarching points learned. But I'll let you have the last word there.
Sure. And this is not exactly relevant or in the educational context. But when I was doing that speech at DECA and we mentioned Shark Tank, it was funny. She assigned it as a homework thing, so they have to watch it all the time. So I learned more from the kids, I think, than they learned from me. But I learned that Bombas Socks was one of the most successful things that ever went on Shark Tank. They started with $170,000 investment. Now it's worth over $20 million. And then one of the most successful companies that was declined on Shark Tank was Ring Central. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I never knew that they went to Shark Tank to be considered there. And they were, and no one bought into it. So I thought that was pretty interesting too. So that's your extra 2 cents that you didn't ask for, but I thought that was pretty fun. So.
No, that's fantastic. That's fascinating. So there's lots of lessons there. You might have a valid deal. Some of that might be, I didn't know about Ring Central. I'm familiar with both Bombas Socks and Ring Central. I'm actually a customer of Ring Central. So what are a couple quick lessons? You might have a valid deal that is going to work out, and either they didn't articulate it well enough. I have no idea. Maybe they didn't articulate it. Maybe it just wasn't the right time. And right. It highlights the complexity of investing, number one. It also highlights the importance of stick-to-itiveness, because the people that started Ring Central obviously felt committed to the fact that they had a good product in hand and they just kept working it. So lots of lessons there. What are, I guess, the lessons, I just sort of bring it to closure. What are some of the lessons? And I sort of talked about that. The need for stick-to-itiveness. Sorry, go. You throw out a couple points.
No, absolutely. That is key. I mean, absolutely. Tenacity, knowledge of the deal, focus on the strengths, be very aware of the challenges, present it in the most clear light. Of course, you're selling something. You want it to look good. But again, be adaptable, be flexible, be creative. I've got several deals right now that I don't have a home for. And most of them are startups. Most of them are the next Facebook, so to speak, as far as the seller. But it's hard to find them. Be involved in investor groups. Use your resources. LinkedIn, local networking groups. Some realize you alluded to earlier, syndication, various type groups. Who has 1031s that has money that has to go somewhere? How do you get involved with those people? And I'm speaking from both sides here as a broker to find those people. Or if you're a borrower and you're looking to find that money, where are you going to go? Find a network of those places. Where do those people go? If you want to find money for X industry, okay, what's that look like? Where would you find those type people? So.
Yeah, fantastic. I think that will be a wrap. Bill, obviously we have your website. I'm just wanting to highlight where people can find you. OptiveCommercialCapital.com. We'll put that in the notes, probably on the screen somewhere. What's another way for people to contact you?
Absolutely. Great. I appreciate that. Yes, you can reach me directly, Bill at Optive, OptiveCC. com. And I just got tired of making people write out commercial capital. So Bill at OptiveCC.com or general to the company info at OptiveCC.com. I'm happy to give my phone number as well, 303-885-9701. I look forward to talking to people. Much like you, we do an awful lot of diverse things. It's hard to sometimes explain business loans, commercial loans, for everything from fix and flips to developments to partner buyouts, you name it. But I'm happy. I like to talk to people and grow and learn. And the more I get exposed to, the more I learn and the more I can share with other people. So great to be here. I really, Fantastic. Really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to continue to share the opportunity of doing stuff with you.
Yeah, likewise. You can also find Bill on LinkedIn. He's active on LinkedIn. I happen to know that as well. Very good. Well, thank you very much, Bill. It's been a great conversation. I hope some people learn some things from it. I'm going to now just segue to a quick word about our sponsor, which is Infinity Commercial Capital. I have said it at the beginning, we help people find money, much like Bill does. We're lenders, financing advisors, providing permanent. I am going to read a little bit here, so I'm just going to own that. Providing permanent bridge and construction capital solutions for commercial projects. Enterprises, kind of like what Bill mentioned, everything from 1-4 unit rental properties, multifamily properties, all manner of other commercial real estate. Our value propositions are really four things. We represent you, the borrower. So we are representing you as you're looking for financing, as opposed to just trying to fit you into existing loan packages we have. The 30-year fixed rate commercial loan, I think, is a big one. That longer amortization means lower debt payments, bridge loans for residential and commercial properties. Finally, simplified underwriting. Many times that involves no tax returns, no personal debt to income requirements, no global cash flow analysis. And I think that's important. There's a time and a place for all of that. But that is the niche that we are serving. You can find us at infinitycomcapital.com. That's our website, phone number 314-403-7745. Info at infinitycomcapital.com. You can find us all over social media where we're constantly posting educational content as well. Remember to like our show or subscribe to our show depending on the platform. If you have questions or comments, leave them in the comment section on YouTube. You can actually leave reviews and comments in Apple Podcasts and in other places. Please feel free to do that. If you have questions, Bill or I would be happy to answer those. And if you want to be on the show, reach out to us. Happy to talk with you about that. Stay tuned as we have further shows, and we look forward to seeing you and chatting with you in the future. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Questions, comments, want to be a guest?
You can reach Carl at kbaker@infinitycomcapital.com. You can find all episodes of Infinite Returns Commercial Real Estate Investing on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, happy investing.